Paul Duane's Irish folk horror film, All You Need Is Death, is now playing in select theaters and on digital from XYZ Films. Beyondfest says, "You'll never be able to hear another folk tune without shivering in fear." David Jenkins of Little White Lies calls it grimly refreshing and confident. You can tell that everyone involved in the making really understood and appreciated the assignment. Watch the genuinely horrifying All You Need Is Death, available everywhere you buy movies.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Don't touch that dial. You're tuned in to the Dread Podcast Network.
Welcome to Development Hell. For every horror movie that hits VOD, countless others end up DOA. Development Hell is the podcast dedicated to unearthing these cursed horror productions. We're going to find out what went wrong and then decide if these titles still stand a shot at the green light. I am your host, Josh Korngut. I am the managing editor of Dread Central. I am also a filmmaker in Toronto, Canada. This podcast is a proud member of the Dread Podcast Network. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to a brand new episode of Development Hell. I'm sorry I took a whole week off, but we're back after a two-week hiatus, and I'm happy to see you. I took the week to go to New York City to cover the Tribeca Film Festival. It was very magical and glamorous, and I felt like a Muppet on vacation. And now that we're back, we have a pretty exciting, colorful new topic, which is Brian Fuller's Mockingbird Lane pilot. So this is Brian Fuller's sort of reimagining of the Munsters for NBC in 2012, and it never got picked up for a series, and we're going to talk about why. Today we have a very important returning guest judge. We've got Sheree Bohannon. Sheree, how's it going?
It's going great. I'm happy to be back. One of my favorite places to be.
Wow. Sheree, just in case people don't remember, and shame on them, can you reintroduce yourself to the Development Hell audience?
Yes, I write for Dread Central, so I get to bother Josh often. If you've opened a streaming guide these last 9-ish months, you've probably read some of my work. Thank you. I am also the co-host of A Nightmare on Fear Street and one of the co-hosts for Bloody Massacre and one of the many rotating hosts on The Alter Tapes, in case you like a short horror film as opposed to a full feature situation.
Wow, that's a lot of podcasts for one person. My condolences. As I said, we're talking about Mockingbird Lane, so that means we're going to be talking about the Munsters, we're going to be talking about Mr. Brian Fuller, and then of course we're going to be talking about Mockingbird Lane, this series that never made it to air, but spoiler alert, we really liked the pilot. Would you be okay if we started off with just talking a little bit about the Munsters?
Yes, please.
So I guess my first question to you is, before I give a little seminar on the actual facts, in your POV, what is the Munsters?
So the Munsters, for me, when I was growing up and watching it on TV late at Nick at Night, back when they did older stuff, it was not the Addams Family, but it was very cute because Herman Munsters laugh. And we also had that like weird cousin who was not a monster, and so they treated her like she was on the podcast.
Yeah.
And so it was this funny family situation about monsters. And that's my aesthetic. So I live.
My like interpretation was that it also was just like, is this the Addams Family? I guess it's not. And I don't know what came first. I'm guessing the Addams Family, but I couldn't tell you.
I knew this like 2 weeks ago because I put them both on a streaming guide. I want to say the Addams Family started like a week before and then wrapped up like a couple weeks before.
okay, so a suit was like, let's do our version of the Addams Family, or is it just like weird timing?
I think it was weird timing. Like, somebody probably was like, me and my friend have an idea, and then those friends started fighting. They're like, well, I'm gonna do it anyways. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, oh no, we're both getting canceled. Now what?
Oh my god, and they opened up dueling pizza shops, and only yes. one can survive. So, if it's okay with you, maybe I'll give, like, a little bit of a brief summary of The Munsters.
Would love that. Thank you.
So, The Munsters was a sitcom from CBS back in 1964, and it aired until 1966. It was a sitcom depicting the home of a group of friendly monsters. It starred Fred Gwynn as the head of the household, Herman Munster. You had Yvonne DiCarlo as his wife, Lily, who, oops, is a vampire. There's also Al Lewis as the grandpa. He is a Dracula-type character. There was Beverly Owen, but was actually replaced by Pat Priest, who was like the teenage niece, Marilyn, who is like the odd, sort of ugly duckling character, but is conventionally pretty. And then there was a werewolf little boy son by the name of Eddie, played by Butch Patrick. So this little sitcom was from the creators of Leave It to Beaver, and it had the same kind of aesthetic of like a cutesy family living the suburban life, but they're monsters. It had, as we were saying, like a very similar vibe to the Addams Family, but to my understanding, actually rated somewhat higher. So it was, like, the more popular of the two, which I could have never guessed.
Same.
I know.
Especially because the Addams Family started getting movies sooner, and so it just made sense they would be more popular.
And better movies. I don't think, The Munsters never really had big-budget theatrical films until, well, soon. Those Addams Family movies, I don't know about you, I am a big fan.
I grew up thinking I was Wednesday Addams.
I mean, I see it for you, to be honest. Are you Wednesday and I'm Pugsley and that's just the truth? That's cool. I like that for us. That's going to be a Halloween one of these days.
What are you doing this virtual Halloween? Because I got a black dress.
Oh my God, let's do it. Finally, I'll come and wait, I don't even know where you live. Minneapolis is not a state. It's a city. Minnesota?
Minnesota, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I did it.
It's so close to the wrong side of Canada that you can just get here anyways.
Could you tell me what province I live in?
I thought you were in Toronto.
Toronto is a city, my friend.
Oh, no. I went to school in America. How dare you?
You see, I struggled. So we both struggled, and that's beautiful. I struggled with your state, and no one in the States needs to know about our provinces. It's just not important. But for anyone curious at home, it is Ontario. Okay, back to the...
I used to know that, damn it. I used to know that. It's true.
Why did I put you on the spot? That was rude.
No, I'm so sad.
Listen, I didn't know the difference between Minneapolis and Minnesota until 5 minutes ago, but I guessed correct.
To be fair, it's just cold and sad.
I mean, listen, we relate. Yeah, so there were 70 episodes of the show produced, which seems like a lot considering it only ran from 64 to 66. And it was canceled due to competitive ratings from ABC's Batman show, which is hilarious. A quote from Little Butch Patrick, who said, I think Batman was to blame for our cancellation. Batman just came along and took our ratings away. That said, The Munsters went into syndication, and that's where it achieved, like, mega success and popularity. There were a bunch of reboots over the years. One in the 80s. There was a bunch of, like, TV movies. There was what we're going to talk about today, Mockingbird Lane in 2012. And, of course, there's the upcoming Rob Zombie-directed Universal feature film adaptation. You kind of answered this question for me already. But, like, do you have, like, a relationship with the Munsters? Is it just the Nick at Night sort of phenomenon for you?
That's kind of it. Because as a kid, I loved older sitcoms, especially ones that were a little bit darker. Mm-hmm. And the Monsters and the Addams Family is what was considered dark for their day. And so I gravitated to them. And I loved that they lined them up. So I could catch one and then run to another channel and catch the other one.
Like on Sci-Fi. You were so spooky. You were a spooky kid.
Right? I needed extra spooky. And so I was getting double helpings. But like I never saw like an overall plot or arc. I don't know if they ever had any because I saw them so randomly. Mm-hmm. So I'm loving that they're like on places I can stream them now if I ever get time.
I would like... get really high and watch all of The Munsters one of these days.
I want to do for the 4th of July.
Let's do it. Did you guys ever get the new Addams Family, like from the late 90s?
No.
I think it was Canadian, but there was a show here called The New Addams Family, and it was like very bad.
Very original.
But I liked it.
I would have watched it. Like, I watched Big Wolf on Campus as a tween. So, like,
okay, yeah, it's the exact same energy as Big Wolf on Campus.
It feels like it, the way you described it. And I was like, you know what? I would have done it. I did Young Hercules. So, like, who am I?
Oh, Young Hercules was good. What are you saying? Stop.
Ryan Gosling was cute. That's what it was. Because, oh, like, God, if you really think about it, was it a real show? Or was he just there in his, like, muscle shirts?
He was a cutie. I've been rewatching Breaker High.
I never got to see that one.
Okay, Breaker High was a show with Ryan Gosling where he attended high school on a cruise ship. And every episode, the high school kids would, like, go to a different country and learn about their cultures. And it was, like, definitely racist, but, like, also educational. It was so good.
There was this moment in, like, the early aughts where it was, like, a charming Canadian racism. And I think it's because it was a different kind of racism than here. So we're like, oh, that's charming.
You really got it on the nose. You really got it.
I think about the stuff we used to watch, and I'm just like, is this what you really what you did to Jimmy Degrassi? Is it really what you did?
It is. Yeah, we're violent. We're just nice about it. Right? Can I tell you about my relationship with the Munsters? Sure.
Yes, please.
So I've never seen an episode. I don't know. I don't understand why exactly. It's never really been on syndication around me when I've had TV. Yeah, so I've never seen it. I've seen what we're watching today, but I know every possible detail about the original series because I am the managing editor at Dread Central, and I have written I don't know how many articles about the upcoming Rob Zombie movie adaptation. And so for every article I have to like change it up and like get a different fact from the original series into it. So for like it must be 100 articles that I've written now, and for each one I do something different. And so wow, do I know a lot of random crap about the Munsters, yet have never seen it.
I included the original show on one of my streaming guides and forgot that that was the first image. And so I thought my article was you and I was tagged in the wrong article. And yeah. I almost messaged y'all to be like, hey, this isn't mine. I'm like, oh, wait, no, it's a streaming guide. Shh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of visual options for the Munsters in our WordPress because of me in every article that I've ever had to write. So I'm kind of like trapped in this bizarre purgatory of like constantly having to write about the Munsters. And that is my personal relationship with it, to the point where I was doing the research for today's episode and I was like, oh no, the Munsters are back. No. But at the same time, I'm not mad at them. It's not their fault.
Did you think about abandoning them for Wednesday?
I mean, I wish that I could. I'm more of an Addams Family guy. I am interested in this Wednesday show.
I don't even like Tim Burton anymore, but I'm going to watch it.
Tim Burton is almost on the same level as J.K. Rowling when it comes to like disappointing us to our heroes ending up monsters at the end of the day, but also having provided me with like so much content that formed me creatively that it's tragic and it's kind of Greek, really, at the end of the day.
Right?
Yeah.
Because, like, he was the Brian Fuller for those of us who were kids in, like, the 90s. And then we got older and we're like, well, let's also actually go follow Brian Fuller now. And it was the better choice because, as far as I know, Brian Fuller's out here embarrassing me when it comes to talking about diversity in his work.
I don't think so. Brian Fuller seems like a really cool, queer guy.
He does.
And Tim Burton, I think, has just put his foot in his mouth way too many times when it comes to diversity and race. If you guys don't know what we're talking about, just take a quick Google into what he's had to say about diversity casting in his films. It's pretty shocking. It's always about his dreams, too. He's like, why should I cast people of color when I only make movies about my dreams and I don't dream about anyone that's not white? And I was like, well, that's weird.
I was like, your dreams are racist too, Timmy. Your dreams are racist too.
What? What did he say once? He was like, well, yeah, well, there's black exploitation movies and they don't cast white people. So why should my white movies cast them? And I was like, You're talking to the media. Like, you need to stop.
Listen.
He's hell. But he's made some of my, truly so many of my favorite, my number one favorite film of all time is Sleepy Hollow.
I found it easy to get rid of him because most of his movies have Johnny Depp in them. And Johnny Depp has been playing a pile of shit for so long.
Oh, no.
Remember when he did The Long Ranger and he played Tonto? Remember that?
What was he at? Oh, yeah, that wasn't even that long ago.
I refused to watch it, but I saw him in the image and like, this is where we have to separate, Johnny. I've been hearing stuff, but this is too far. I'm done.
You were early to the game.
Listen, always leave early.
Always leave early. Always leave early and always arrive late. So yeah, that's our, I think we have some pretty unique relationships with the Munsters. Maybe we aren't the number one resources for Munster information because we haven't seen the show. But at the same time, you know, we're who we are.
We can fix it. It's on Tubi and Pluto TV. We can get drunk and fix this next weekend.
Dre, okay, I have a question for you.
Yes.
So there's this man that created Mockingbird Lane, the project that we're talking about today. Yeah, is Brian Fuller. And I'm like, who is this man? Because he just seems like a cutie.
Listen, Brian Fuller is a genius whose shows are forever being canceled early. Let me walk you through the world of Fuller, or the Fuller universe, if you will. The Fullerverse.
Okay.
So, Brian Fuller, a.k.a. the man I call Daddy, don't tell him. Okay. He is the creator of NBC's 2012 Munsters reboot Mockingbird Lane. Mm-hmm. Yes. But also, he has given us so much as a writer and producer of television. He created Dead Like Me, Wonder Falls, my personal favorite, Pushing Daisy. Mm-hmm. If you've not seen it, go do that now. Stop what you're doing. Go do it now. Mm-hmm. If you're driving, I don't care. Stop. Watch Pushing Daisies.
You've just killed so many people.
And they're welcome, because they had to keep pushing daisies. So what was the point of living?
Oh, wow. that was good. Okay, yeah, okay, okay. All right.
He also gave us Hannibal, the series, and American Gods, which is still on Stars, I believe.
No.
Yeah. In addition to all of this, he has also worked as a writer and executive producer on the Star Trek television series Voyager and Deep Space Nine. I haven't seen either because, like, Star Trek is triggering for me, but I'm going to because he did it. It's been in my queue forever. If Brian Fuller's name is on it, I'm going to do it. It's just a matter of
when. Isn't it appropriate of us to watch Star Trek? Isn't that straight culture? And, like, wouldn't that be offensive?
That's like, just it. I'm hearing the newer Star Treks are getting very queer. And so, it might finally be our time to jump in, like a bad game of Double Dutch.
Okay.
Yes. he is also the co-creator of Star Trek Discovery, which I believe is the queer one I'm talking about, but I can't be for sure because I don't watch yet.
Oh my God. Can I tell you my favorite, like, lesser known Brian Fuller project that exists?
Yes.
Okay. So were you aware that he directed, oh no, sorry. He wrote and produced the 2002 Carrie, like, TV adaptation.
The one when she was, like, in junior high?
She wasn't, no, she was not in junior high. She was
you mean Carrie. Sorry, I forgot what we were talking about. I thought you meant, like, Carrie Bradshaw from Sex and the City.
Also, that was also not in junior high.
I don't know how kids are aging. I was homeschooled in Missouri.
Oh, I love that Carrie Bradshaw, which is like 2-season origin story series. I forgot all about that. So Brian Fuller wrote and produced a 2002 direct to TV sort of reboot of Stephen King's Carrie. And it starred Angela Bettis as Carrie and Patricia Clarkson, my hero, as Margaret White. And it wasn't great, but it was very bizarre. I think it was, like, intended to be a TV show, but then kind of got the axe and then was just released as, like, a really long TV movie.
Yeah.
But it's random.
It is not my favorite Carrie situation, but it's not my least favorite Carrie situation.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, oh my God. I blocked it and I didn't remember who did it, but now that it's all coming back to me now that you said this. He's giving me nothing but days of entertainment. So if he wants to try something and fail, that's his right.
I can't believe you've seen it. No one has seen it. It's one of, like, one of my favorite subgenres is, like, absolutely forgotten Stephen King adaptations. And this is, like, the king of that.
Look at you kinging it up. It's just, I think people have seen it, but they don't want to talk about it. Much like crime.
I think Catherine Isabel of Ginger Snaps fame is also in it, I think.
Yeah.
Why am I trying to make Carrie 2002 happen?
It's your fetch. Don't do it. Don't do it.
I'm trying.
But back to other things that Brian Fuller has given us or will give us. He's going to do this new Christine remake.
Oh, more Stephen King from Fuller. Interesting, interesting. What's your relationship with Christine?
So I grew up reading Stephen King. I thought I was going to be the next Stephen King, but novels are hard, and so I tapped out.
They're so hard.
So hard, especially to write something this thick as a Bible. Oh, just not God. For me. I can't commit to anything that long. Christine was not one of my favorite books, but it wasn't my least favorite book. However, the movie, which I really like John Carpenter's Halloween and some other stuff John Carpenter's given us, but I did not dig his Christine take. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping that the Fuller aesthetic will embrace her and make her the badass that she could be.
Interesting. I feel like it gets a bad rap because it's like, ooh, it's a killer car, and it's like such a silly log line, but maybe it has potential to be good. I have not, it's one of the Stephen King books I have not read. Which has a lot, because I've read a lot of them. But I think one of the reasons I never read it is because I was like, a killer car, okay. And I, although some, I've read some of his short stories about killer cars, and they're great. Like Uncle Otto's Truck, get into it. But
I'm gonna go to bat for Uncle Steven this one time and saying that the book was so much better than that movie because the movie cut out so much, because you have to cut out a lot of Uncle Steven's stuff, and it cut out the heart of the book. And so you don't see that this boy is becoming possessed, and you don't have this timeline that makes everything make sense. And so people are just like doing weird shit and moving through it like a Lifetime movie. And I'm hoping that like with the Fuller embrace, we'll get more of the actual heart of the book, so we can actually be invested, not just be like, this car killed somebody, why am I here?
That is exactly how I would describe Christine.
Yeah. I'm rooting for Daddy Brian Fuller. I am.
I think that he could do it. Let's queer up Christine. Whenever I think of Christine, I think of that Rebecca Hall movie where she does bad things on TV. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh no.
Okay, Rebecca Hall of the Night House fame. Yes. Was in this movie called Christine, based on a real woman, I forget her last name, named Christine, who, spoiler alert, like, was a TV on-air reporter who, like, dies by suicide live on television.
Oh, that's new, right?
No, within the last 5-10 years.
That's new for me, because I've not
seen I
have heard of that story, unless it's a newer one, because I mean, time is weird. But like, I know that happened to a reporter in the last, like, during this decade, like during this pandemic, a reporter.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Yuck. Interesting.
So I don't know if this is a different situation, or I don't know
probably timelines, but, I think likely it's weird that this has happened more than once.
Yeah.
Although it does make for an interesting narrative device.
Listen.
So if we had to pick, you and I, right here, right now, our favorite, number one, can only bring one with us to the other side, Brian Fuller project, what is it?
Pushing Daisies, Me and the Pie Maker and Friends All Day. You?
Yeah, Pushing Daisies is definitely up there. I'm also a big fan of Dead Like Me.
Yes.
No, it has to go to Pushing Daisies. You're right. Pushing Daisies is just so magical. Those mermaid ant ladies. Come on.
It was my favorite show, and when it was canceled, I gave up TV for a year, and I don't know what you know about me, but TV was my best friend at the time I gave it up for a year, because I was so mad.
Wow. See? We're taking it seriously, Brian. Bring it back. Everything else is coming back, but
Every time they tease me, because they're like, maybe on Broadway, maybe on a movie. And I'm like, I don't care. Just give it to me now, Daddy. Give it to me now. And he's like, stop calling me Daddy or I'll block you. I'm like, okay, fine.
He's like, I'm gay.
He's like, gays, I don't know you, weird girl.
More than anyone else. I think Pushing Daisies would be a great Broadway show.
Especially because Kristen Chenoweth can do all the notes.
Oh, yeah. And I forgot about her.
The cast stopped aging when the show was canceled in protest.
What's the lead guy's name? I always forget.
Do you mean Ned, played by the so tall and so lovely?
Yeah. Yes. That's exactly what I'm talking about. I mix them up with so many people, but yeah.
No, Lee Pace has always been a gorgeous man.
There he is. Yes, Lee Pace.
He was too talented, too smart, and too beautiful to be a straight man, and I always knew this in my soul. Mm. But when he came out with Missy Elliott gifts on Twitter, that's when I was like, I can still make it work if you can.
I can get creative. I didn't know he was queer. That's incredible.
Oh, whoopsie. It was Twitter back when I was in Chicago, so like before the pandemic, so maybe people were still hustling and bustling. But he did it with Missy Elliott gifts from Gossip, because like some reporter was being an asshole as usual and just like harassing him. And so he finally went to Twitter and was like, people keep asking me, and I've never really been ashamed of it. I just think it was anybody's fucking business, but if you really care that much, Missy Elliott gif. And then he went into it, and I was like, oh my god, he's so salty and sassy, and I love him even more.
He had to. I mean, so clearly he's been queer this entire time.
It makes sense, because all of his movies are quality movies. He doesn't do shit.
No. Which is, I mean, listen, there's lots of crap gay content in this world, and we have to be honest with ourselves about that.
Listen, all I know is Lee Pace only knows how to make hits. I've yet to see him anything bad, which is why I was not surprised that him and Brian Fuller were like, let's do Pushing Daisies to make the best show on earth.
Bring it back, okay?
Listen.
It got two seasons, right? Or is it?
So what happened was it started and it was like winning people over. And then the writer's strike of that era was like, haha, no more.
Right. It was a writer's strike.
And when it came back, like the second season was trying to like figure out how to like make up for what they didn't get to do last season and move forward. And then like ratings plummeted because people were like, what is TV? We forgot. And so it was one of the casualties, unfortunately, of the writer's strike, like so many other shows. But this is what really mattered to me.
Yeah, it was incredible. And I think another project of his that may have been my favorite if it had had more than one episode was what we're talking about today, which is Mockingbird Lane.
I see so much Pushing Daisies in Mockingbird Lane that it hurts my soul.
Yes, the aesthetic, the Fuller aesthetic is present. So we've said it a couple of times, but Mockingbird Lane is a 2012 TV special, I guess, technically, that was a spooky but also comedic reimagining of the Munsters. It was developed on NBC this time around by Brian Fuller. And before we get into the nitty-gritty details of it, I think we should stop here and just mention there was a problematic figure involved as director. Brian Singer, who you may know from, I think, the X-Men films, Inapt Pupil, I think.
Yep.
Was the director of this project. Do you want to sort of lead us into why this might be a controversial figure?
So Brian Singer has been a known predator for quite some time now. Underage boys were stepping forward from Apt Pupil and projects afterwards to talk about things that he did to them and things that he did and made and recorded. And it's been like a gross ongoing thing, and he still kept making more X-Men movies, and we're like, but like all these kids are coming forward saying this happened, should we not stop him from working?
And the answer was no, we're not gonna stop.
Because people just don't care about other people.
No.
I wish I remember the story Elliot Page was telling about how Brian Singer sort of outed him before he was ready to come out. Because, like, we all love Elliot Page. And, like, it's been, like, a very overarching coming out process. Because, And, like, one of the first stops Brian Singer sort of ruined on set of X-Men by saying something like bullshitty to him. And I wish I remembered it, and I wish I remember where I read it from, because I mean, like, it's part of the bigger monster that a person who is doing things to children is also outing people. Like, that's nobody's, you don't do that to somebody, I feel.
No, that's abuse for sure.
Yeah. And I think it just shows what kind of a director he was, but he kept working because we don't stop monsters, unfortunately.
No, I have a feeling, but I can't confirm it, that since the Me Too movement, that Brian Singer has sort of retreated into the shadows, which is where he belongs.
I think one of his last movies was Bohemian Rhapsody, and
oh my God, something
afterwards, but I don't remember what it was, if it happened.
Bohemian Rhapsody was like 5 minutes ago, so...
Right? Like, again, like, he was nominated for things for that, and people were finally like, we can't give him an award, so we're going to just remove the movie. And people who saw the movie, I did not, because Brian Singer was attached, said the movie was kind of awful and sort of did Freddie Mercury a lot of injustice.
I did not see it, and I'm disappointed to learn that he was involved. And, you know, there's a lot of crappy figures in Hollywood, and they're going to be attached to stuff that we're going to talk about, so I guess it's important to just spotlight what's going on. And it's unfortunate that it has to happen with almost every episode, I feel like, these days. But
I am the bringer of bad news.
You are the harbinger.
I am. Like, I'm gonna fight Emily for the title. But I will say that I as much as I don't want to support Brian Singer, if there was a way to get this back to Brian Fuller, aka Daddy, the good Brian, without Singer getting any of the coins, I would be on board for that Kickstarter. I would be on board for that hashtag, because this was a good time, as we're gonna talk about.
Yeah, it definitely was. And I'd like to see Brian Fuller, you know, maybe take on more directing duties, because I think he is talented enough to do it.
He can do anything. He can do no wrong. He is my daddy. But I respect that he's like, I want to be a writer and a producer, because I am a writer and producer, and I have fun directing, but like, it's not my like ministry. And so I would, if I could pick and choose, I would pick those two hats probably as well.
Well, to dig ourselves back out of the well of terror and abuse, the pilot for Mockingbird Lane aired on October 26, 2012, and was sort of featured as what NBC noted as a Halloween special. It was a Halloween-themed sort of event that led into their supernatural drama Grimm, and was given the option to be renewed as a series, but spoiler alert, it was not. So
again, I know, thwarting his genius before we even get anywhere.
This time around, earlier than usual, didn't even get a season.
I don't know why network TV hates Brian Fuller. They're like, your shows are too smart and too fun. Go home. And I'm suffering every time.
They're maybe a little too outside of the box aesthetically.
And that's why I need to escape them, because like, I want to have good things.
Mm-hmm. You deserve them. And what's kind of surprising is that it did fairly well. Like, a lot of people watched it. It was seen by 5.5 million people. It did well with the, like, important 18 to 49 age group. And yet, still, it wasn't picked up. So let's, if you're into this, let's talk about some of the cast and their characters and sort of how they reworked them for a sort of more modern take on the monsters.
I got thoughts.
So we've got Jerry O'Connell here as Herman Munster. This is a much sort of sexier reimagining of Herman, and I would also say more of like a tragic reimagining. He is sort of stitched together, not green, and has a heart that needs replacing because he loves too much, which is a little chintzy, but I like it. What are your...
I love Jerry O'Connell, even when he's not in a role that I think he might belong in, because like, we've seen him do this before, but like, he used to be on Sliders, so it's not like, and he also did Scream 2, so it's not his first time in the genre. It was weird to see him play a dad, especially 10 years ago before he was dad age, because I feel like now he's dad age.
Definitely now.
And it was also weird to see his Herman Munster, because like, he was hot, and I'm not used to him being hot. Because I mean, don't get me wrong, like, Fred Gwynne was no monster, but like, we were mostly there for his laugh and his dad vibes.
He was very dad chill, yeah. And Jerry O'Connell, I think, is too, maybe a little too hot for this.
Right? He was giving like weird Christian counselor.
Yeah, which is as hot as you can get for some reason.
Right?
And like really saccharine and like supposed to love his family too much, but then you're looking at him and like, this looks like an underwear model,
right? And I wonder if they'd gotten the season they deserved, would we have done something different with Jerry, because I feel like a little bit of makeup and like a little bit of like changing things to make him a little bit more of a monster, not too far, because again, it's a very lighthearted show. But I think that something besides he loves too hard, which is definitely a first episode to just get a special out.
yeah but it also does feel very Brian Fuller and does feel very Pushing Daisies, but like without the like, it's not quite earned yet, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I wonder if, had we gotten more, would we have seen him and this new heart have complications?
Although he should be gay. This, like, I love too much and I'm super hot. Like, that's gay to me. But
one of the things I like about this show is that, like, three of the cast members in this episode are people I know are queer. I think they were all out and about by this time, or different stages of out and about.
Oh,
and I'm like,
true.
Never on network TV do we ever see that.
That's true. There were a lot of queer people here. And the next person that we're going to talk about is like, famously, one of the most famous lesbians in Hollywood. We've got Portia de Rossi as Lily Munster.
She's the better half.
Yeah. Yeah, so she's playing like a very elegant version of Lily Munster, a very like Mysterioso, kind of spooky, kind of giving me like magician vibes because she like keeps appearing out of nowhere. And like out of spider dust or something. It's like, listen, how would you describe the way that she like evaporates?
It's definitely ghostly, and it's definitely 2012 CGI on broadcast TV. I'm not gonna lie. When I saw her name on the screen, I was like, really? And then I remember she was in Arrested Development, so she can do comedy.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't get her to doing a lot of it in this one, but also it was a solo standalone episode. And so I think that they would have pushed her further and she would have gotten to show what she could do.
I know.
While also being a spider lady.
She's a spider lady. She's easy to sort of hate on, but there's this other show that she was on that's so easy to hate, but then you watch it and it's incredible. It's called Better Off Ted. And she was good in that too. So she's secretly kind of okay.
She too was in Scream 2, and she was one of the unsung heroes of that sorority.
I forgot that she's in Scream 2 with Jerry O'Connell. Do you think they became best friends? Do you think that's how they both came to this project?
They had to. He was like, Sydney killed me. And she was like, Sydney forgot about me.
Yeah. Sydney forgot about her forever. She needs to be in Scream 6.
I think so. Bring everybody back.
It's with the lady that killed someone with her car in real life. You know the one.
Rebecca Gayheart. Yeah.
That's the one.
Dangerous. But no, I feel like Miss DeRossi, we don't put enough respect on her name because we always forget what she's capable of because people don't often ask her to do things, but when they do, it's magic.
I know, but she's also like, just seems, I don't know, this lesbian couple with her and Ellen DeGeneres, they just seem like they're probably evil, right? They just can't not be evil lesbians. But
I mean, I'm not gonna lie, Ellen has not been great these last decades. But I think that Miss DeRossi is staying silent, and I don't know what that is like in their home. But like, I don't see her hanging out with like Kevin Hart and any of the Bushes.
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, but she must be because, you know, it's all in the family. But you know what? You're right. You're innocent until proven guilty, and she is innocent and bad in this.
Some people truly believe that you can be married to somebody and their politics don't affect you. I don't understand that, but if that's what she's believing, congratulations.
You cannot punish her for the sins of her wife. Why would we do that to her? And I do kind of like her on this. There's a point where she like barges into the room when her son is in, I don't know, like scout camp or something. And I was just like, this is queer content. Like this, like I stan her for some reason in this.
Right? No, like she grew on me in this episode. And again, this is before they ever got to do anything else and give her more. Because again, when you give her the jokes, she finds them. But like this was not this vehicle, this episode. It was about setting up the family as a whole and letting like the grandfather and the little boy have their moment and establishing everybody's relationships. It wasn't about letting her be funny and be like, look at me, bitches.
Mm-hmm.
But we would have gotten an episode had we given Brian Fuller more. Stop canceling Brian Fuller stuff.
Stop doing it, people. Even the straights like him, okay? People listen, like Hannibal.
I am here from the straights, people I am ashamed of, to tell you to stop canceling Brian Fuller's shit.
Oh my God, why are you coming out? Because
it means that much to me. I am willing to own the thing I'm ashamed of. I was trying to protect you. I usually just hide in the shadows and hope nobody asks me. But, like, this is too big. Like,
well, you're canceled. So the next person that we have to talk about, although I'm not really interested in doing it, is Charity Wakefield, who I've never heard of, who plays Marilyn Munster, the like classic pretty blonde who is like, you know, the shunned one of the family and is ironically considered to be the ugly duckling, but is like clearly pretty. Who is she? Do you know who this woman is? I've never seen her before.
I know when I saw the Wikipedia page earlier, she did stuff. I just was not very familiar with it.
Okay, I'm not interested in her. Can we move on? Is that okay?
She did good.
She did good. She was very blonde. Her eyes were big. It's fine.
She had a good energy with Eddie Izzard.
Yes. So her and Eddie Izzard together were a great team. And I hear, and we're going to get to it later, that had it continued, it was going to refocus on them more so.
I would have loved that. I would have watched that spinoff. Had they spun out, which I mean, Eddie Izzard deserves her own show. She's always killed. Give her more to do.
They kill her and everything?
No, she's always killed in everything she's ever done.
Oh, that's not good. That's Sean Bean energy.
I mean, as a comedian, she kills. She's a killer. Okay. She's a scene stealer.
I thought she was getting Sean Bean'd and everything.
No, they better not. If you kill Eddie Izzard, I'm gonna appear like Candyman.
That's a good way to finally meet you in real life. I'm gonna have to kill Eddie Izzard.
There goes the last of my frequent flyer miles.
No. So usually I hate kids and everything. Same. Not a big fan of kids. Hate kids. Kids, no. But the kid in this was not bad. We've got Mason Cook as Eddie Munster, a seemingly normal preteen who is also a werewolf and has an interesting teaser sequence where he like turns into a werewolf and like kills all of his camp friends. Yes. But then they're not actually dead, which is a bit of a... I thought they were really killing a bunch of kids in the opening, and I was really excited about it. But no, it was a cop-out.
I'm not going to lie. For a split second, I panicked, and then I remember it's a Brian Fuller thing, so we're not going to just get a bunch of black people up top. Because, like, black people.
It was, true. One black kid has one line and then immediately dies. That's true.
And then, the counselor dude, who's also black, and I'm like, no. Yeah.
And then the fat character immediately as well.
And then the random Asian kid, we even get a name. And I was like, no! No! And I was about to write the note, and I was like, no, it's Brian Fuller. Give it a second.
Yeah.
And then they were all alive. And I was like, okay. If the children in the movie, they deserve a good chase scene, and they deserve to maybe be caught by Michael Myers or whoever.
He did good. The whole episode is sort of about him. He's a little bit of a protagonist energy, and like his parents trying to decide if they need to tell him if he's a spooky ooky ooks, which like clearly you are. Like your mom's a witch.
This dad's boy, dead. Listen, like, he knew something was off, even if we don't want to talk about it.
That's true.
I love this little boy because he reminded me of Ned from Pushing Daisies and that he had this thing, even though he wasn't aware he had it, and the way he's discovering it. And I also think that had this continued, we would have seen at least 90 billion essays on the internet about how his werewolf transformation is him figuring out that he's a queer character.
Oh, it was so obvious to me that was sort of the metaphor here. That was that hit me right away, so I'm glad that you brought that up.
And the sad part is, because of the time, those essays would have been written and published by straight people who would have fucked it up. So maybe we dodged some bullets by just not making it. Can you imagine? I can already see the bylines on that, and I just don't want it myself.
I can, too. Okay, moving on. We've got Eddie Izzard as Grandpa, Lily's father, also a vampire. A lot scarier this time around, Grandpa, than in the Munsters. Much darker, very funny, very, witty and out for blood. What do we think of Eddie Izzard as Grandpa?
I have always loved Eddie Izzard. As a child, I'd watch her do stand-up, and she would talk about how she's just like, I forgot what she called herself at the time, and I don't think it's an appropriate word anymore, so it's good I don't remember. But I remember just being infatuated with her because her humor is so... It's always so dark and so funny and so truthful. And I just aspire. And to see her bring that to this character with the delivery, like, I felt like I was watching like a Broadway lady who's retired come to TV to be like, I'm done with Hollywood hours. Let's go.
Big time, yeah. It's big Patti LuPone energy here.
Yes. Like, she would have fit in with the sisters from Pushing Daisies. They would have had a nice little treehouse of bitter old ladies. And I would have been here for it.
Was it Patti LuPone? I'm Pushing Daisies? Who plays the sister?
She did an appearance, but like it was Swoozie Kurtz and Eileen Green.
Okay, interesting.
I don't know why that's like buried in the back of my brain.
No,
I used to watch Pushing Daisies all the time.
I appreciate an encyclopedia person.
Listen.
Was Eddie Izzard always out as queer?
She used to say that she was a man who liked wearing women's clothes. I want to say she used to say she was a transvestite, which I don't feel is a word that is aged well. So if it
I just don't think it's really
that.
A word anymore. I think it's a dead word.
I think it needs to be because I never felt good about it in my soul. But also, no. I was a bumpkin in Missouri, so people were saying the things. I don't know.
Words change.
Listen, and so I'm happy that she has come out and she's like, hey, these are my pronouns. And I'm sad the internet is shitty about it as usual.
Who was shitty about it?
The internet.
Oh, well, yeah. I love it. I'm so happy to see her being her happiest self, looking beautiful. And even in this, there is a sense that, you know, I don't know. There's a real matriarch feminine energy in this graphic character. And it's not just the manicure.
It's not. It's the capography. It's the way she gets at the husband.
Yeah, totally.
It's everything about her. She's just an inherently matriarchal character. And I aspire to be this kind of a broad or a dame.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what a broad. What a bloody broad.
I want that on my tombstone.
I'll engrave it. Don't you worry. Yeah, this series never made it. It got canceled. It was only ending up as a one episode pilot, aka Halloween special. And it's really traumatic. And do you want to know some insight into maybe why this never continued on into series?
Yes, I want names.
Well, I'm going to give you names. NBC chief executive Robert Greenblatt said this about why they had to sort of pass on the series. And he says, "We just decided that it didn't hold well enough together to yield a series. It looked beautiful and original and creative, but it was ultimately, it just didn't come together. It just ultimately didn't creatively all work. We felt great about the cast, but we tried to make it not just a sitcom. We tried to make it an hour, which ultimately has more dramatic weight than a half hour. It's hard to calibrate how much weirdness versus supernatural versus family story, and I just didn't think we got the mix right."
I'm going to fight Robert.
Robert's dead meat, honey. Yeah, this is bullshit to me. This seems a lie.
Because here's the thing. If this was a special standalone episode, and so you told them to fill an hour, and they filled an hour because Daddy Brian Fuller don't know how to not fill an hour. But if you said, hey, yo, let's do a half hour sitcom situation, he would have given us the best sitcom of our lifetime. But instead, NBC is like, we hate Joy. Snatch the rug.
Mm-hmm. I almost feel like there might have been something going on behind the scenes because, like, you have a fully rounded entire show in 40 minutes here, which, like, even for, like, some other good pilots, they don't really manage to pull together, and this did it. So either he's terrible at his job or he's not saying the whole story.
He's not saying the whole story. And also, while I'm going to fight him, I need to see the receipts to make sure that, like, Bryan Singer wasn't out and about doing stuff. That was also a liability. And he was like, we can't be responsible for what's about to happen here.
Yeah, I'm disappointed. There's also an article from Deadline from 2012 that mentioned that even though it did so-so with ratings, as we mentioned earlier, with 5.5 million views, they just didn't make it to series. But if they had, as I mentioned, they were going to sort of pivot to Marilyn and Grandpa. And that was going to be the focus, because I do think it was the most successful part of the show.
Yes.
With them sort of like being kind of spies together in the woods.
Yeah, him giving people blood. I mean, yeah, Grandpa giving people blood cookies.
The blood cookie was funny.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I forget her name, but there was that actress that was on Mad TV and The Mindy Project.
She's played in Mockingbird Lane. She's played in Pushing Daisies and I think Wonder Falls.
Like the exact same character?
Yeah.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah. Like the Fullerverse is wild.
Oh, that's really interesting and really funny. Yeah, she's hilarious. I wish I had her name, but I don't. I'm sorry, everybody.
I should know. She's been around forever. I'm an asshole.
I think her husband was the voice of the Crypt Keeper.
Oh, that I love that even more. Oh my god. Like
on Kassir or something like that? Yeah.
Fuller thinks of everything. Give him more shows. I stop canceling them.
Glass half full. No, that's not good. and so when it was officially canceled, we had a very tragic, very upsetting tweet from our hero, Daddy Fuller. And he said, "I tweet with a heavy heart. NBC not moving forward with hashtag Mockingbird Lane. From producers and cast, thank you all for your enthusiasm and support."
I'm heartbroken. I know I just discovered this, but I'm heartbroken.
It is pretty good.
Yeah, I never saw it because I was a full baby in rehearsal in my undergrad and didn't know that Bryan Fuller was giving me more things to love because I was miserable.
Were you aware of it?
Not until we were talking about it, and I was like, that sounds familiar. And I was like, oh, because it's a thing I discovered recently, but I never tracked it down.
Mm.
Like, It's hard to find over here. Like, you had to send me the links from, like,
the deep web. We had to go really deep.
Right? Yeah. I have to go throw my computer off my balcony after we're done with
yeah,
this.
Yeah, yeah. That was some dark web stuff. Yeah, I definitely was aware of it, but I never had seen it. For some reason, I wasn't, like, interested. I don't know. It didn't really grab me. But I was incorrect. I really liked it, and I'm really sad that it didn't make it further.
If I see Brian Fuller's name on something, I'm going to watch it again. I'm going to even do Star Trek for this man, because he is my daddy. He has influenced me more than even I'm aware. Like, my aesthetic as a writer is very much somebody who watched a bunch of Fuller stuff and is going to keep trying until somebody lets her do it for free.
I love that. Except for Star Trek, I don't know.
I'm the poor man's Fuller. Yeah. Business cards. Boom.
Fuller. What's the opposite of Fuller? Empty.
Lesser.
You're the empty woman. No.
So, that movie was bad. Let's not bring the empty man in here.
But I read a really interesting article about how it was a trans allegory, and I just choose to believe that it's true.
If it is, that's 1 point for the movie. I didn't understand. We have a whole episode on it on Fear Street. Brother Gulis was there, and we all couldn't find anything nice to say.
That's funny. Yeah, I read some article in Them, and I just wanted to believe it. So, Sheree, do you think, and the answer is no, we will ever that we're ever going to see Mockingbird Lane from Brian Fuller?
I am heartbroken, because I think that if not for the Rob Zombie movie and the Bryan Singer of it all, we would. Because literally everything he's ever given us is a bop, and we all want it all to come back. And so this would have ended up in that same wheel, and we would have been arguing about how can we get it back. But I think that because of the Rob Zombie situation, it's gone now. And that makes me so bitter.
Yeah, we would have had 2 seasons. It would have been canceled, and we would, yeah, you're absolutely right, still be, like, petitioning to get it back on the air.
Listen, I am pushing Daisy's drive tonight on change.org.
I'll support it. I'm going to support it. Wonder Falls would have been cool to get back to. Speaking of Canada.
I feel like Wonder Falls is probably my second favorite in the Fullerverse, which is wild, because I think most people think I'm going to go for Hannibal. And I love the first 2 seasons of Hannibal. I'm finishing season 3. I swear I will. But like, I don't know. I respect that he can do so many different things, and he can give us some darker shit, and he can also go, like, very light and almost like if Disney were cool. Mm-hmm. But I aspire to that particular kind of magical realism, that's a little bit twisted and dark, but not too twisted and dark in my own writing, even though I'm a dark, twisty bitch every other day. And so I'm just here for, like, the Pushing Daisies and the Wonder Falls.
Well, you can always use it for your own inspo, as, you know, you grow as a creative. What does that mean? Sheree, where can you be found on the internet if you so wish to be found?
Yes, you can find me at Miss Sheree. There's 3 S's in there, y'all. Sorry about it. On Twitter and on Instagram. You can also find me haunting Josh at Dread Central if you are into reading. Mm-hmm. If you're not into reading, I have 3 podcasts. A Nightmare on Fear Street is at Nightmare Fierce on Twitter, and A Nightmare on Fear Street on Instagram. And Blurdy Massacre is at Blurdy Massacre on Insta and Twitter. And the Alter Tapes, you have to find through Anatomy of a Scream Pod Squad. It's a little bit trickier, but worth it.
Mm-hmm. And if you're listening with us, you probably are familiar with Anatomy of a Scream Pod Squad, because it's our origins.
Right?
Yeah.
We're like cousins.
We truly are blood cousins. Thank you for talking with me today, Sheree.
Yay. Always. Thank you for having me on Talk About Daddy.
Anytime. Thank you so much for listening to Development Hell. If you enjoy this podcast, then please do us a major favor of leaving us 5 stars and writing a positive review. It really makes all the difference in the world. We'll see you next week with a brand new episode of Development Hell.
Thank you for listening to the Dread Podcast Network.